Good morning. It's Thursday, April 2nd. You're watching The Program with Ted Rall and John Kiriakou. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ted. How you doing?
Pretty good. Let's go over what we're talking about today. John, did you have a chance to catch the president's speech last night?
I'm sorry to say that I did.
It wasn't exactly, look, I didn't expect much and I got less than I expected.
You know, I'm trying to get a pardon. I'm trying really hard to thread this needle, right? But literally every word out of the man's mouth last night was a lie. That's all there was to it. Yeah. Literally everything he said was a lie. And then saying that he's going to bomb the electrical grid, that's a war crime. You cannot bomb infrastructure. So he's announcing in advance that he's committing a war crime. I just don't understand it at all.
Assuming that this isn't just like bluster for the Canadian for the Iranians, I suspect strongly that he's not done. He's not really pulling out in 2 or 3 weeks. This is all just misdirection, and I think we're going in with ground troops.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. We're going to go in with ground troops, and you know, is he going to be able to tell people that their sons were killed for Israel and they should be okay with that?
Well, so John, this was a scripted speech where he went, one of those scripted speeches where the president then like had his little meandering, nobody's ever seen such, nobody thought it was possible kind of diatribes that we've seen over and over again. John, this seemed to me like, one of the president's do or die, make it or break it moments. And it doesn't seem like it was taken very seriously, in terms of the final product is seriously lacking, right? I mean, what happens here internally in the White House? I mean, was the original speechwriter not very good, or did they not have enough freedom of action with the president looking over their shoulder, or is it just Trump's impossible to work for, is it all Trump's fault? Like, what's going on?
I keep coming back to this comment that he made a few weeks ago in which a reporter asked him who his advisors were. And he said that he didn't have any advisors, that he simply went with whatever was in his gut. And I think that's exceedingly dangerous. I'm sure that it's true. I'm sure that he does just go with his gut, but that's exceedingly dangerous. And I think that he believes or wants to believe what Benjamin Netanyahu has told him about Iran, even though it's demonstrably false. And he's just going with it. That's the bottom line. He's just going with it. And the American people are just going to have to either, accept it or walk away.
But the thing is, the American people have already made very clear that they don't accept it. I mean, the approval rating for the president himself is at a record low. The approval rating for the war is basically roughly less than 1 out of 3, maybe closer to 1 out of 4 voters. A lot of Republicans don't like this war and are worried about it. It just seems to me like this is a no-win situation for the president. Yeah. I don't see how it, I mean, I just don't, it just seems so poorly thought out. It seems so impulsive. It's a little bit breathtaking.
Well, he said something too yesterday offhandedly that was so patently offensive. I can't believe people didn't jump up and down. He said, people are going to have to get used to high gas prices. If they don't like it, tough luck. It's like, that's not what you said at the State of the Union just 5 weeks ago when you were bragging about the price of gas and how it had never been lower. And I mean, this is exactly what the Republicans ran on against first Joe Biden and then Kamala Harris, was the price of gas. Okay, now the price of gas is as high, almost as high as it was at any point in the Biden administration. What are you going to do about it? Because it's not just gas prices. Gas prices lead to higher transportation costs, which lead to higher food prices and things for everything from, roofing tiles to bottles of water. It's everything. Everything goes up.
Yeah, well, for sure. And the thing is, it's not going to come down quickly. I mean, and that said, though, there wasn't like a lot of reassurance to the American people, right? Like I was expecting to hear something along the lines of, yes, you know, I see you. I know that the prices have gone up. You know, I see the gas prices as I drive around Washington, and I know it's a problem. But don't worry, it's not going to stay up for very long. The war is going to come to a conclusion. We're going to reopen the strait. Prices will come down. It might take a few months, but in the long run, we're all going to be better off. That's the message that Americans would expect to hear from their president, but they didn't. It was basically like, suck it up, buttercup.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's what it came down to.
It's really this. I mean, I published the column I was talking about yesterday. I teased yesterday about, you know, fascism. You know, if people who studied, I studied fascism under Robert O. Paxton, the author at Columbia of The Anatomy of Fascism, which I would encourage anyone to read. It's the most useful book ever written on the topic in the English language.
Yeah. And
Paxton always talks about how war is sort of the inevitable result, culmination of fascism because of all the hostile, hyper-masculine, aggressive rhetoric. You have to ultimately break something. But in the end, war destroys the fascist regime. In the end, right? Like it certainly, you know, Hitler probably only wanted a quick invasion of Poland and just didn't expect a two-front war that was going to grind up Europe and North Africa. And, you know, but that destroyed him. It destroyed Germany. You know, it just seems like this will destroy, whether Trump is fascist or not, this will certainly destroy politically his administration.
Yeah, I agree. This is going to be a serious problem. But, and this is another interesting thing to me, Ted, is that it seems like he genuinely doesn't give a shit about Republican prospects in the midterm election.
No, he doesn't care. It's true. It's true. By the way, politically, by the way, it's a good thing that we have Aquiles Larrea, a friend of the show, is going to be coming on at the bottom of the hour to talk about the economic impact of the war. So that'll be, I'm looking forward to hearing him talk about that. He's Larrea Wealth Management. We've had him on before. But yeah, he doesn't care. John, we have a few leftover questions from yesterday's Q&A show. Should we get to those? Okay.
Sure thing.
Manchild, thanks for the donation. Since Trump has effectively torched America's global reputation, is the damage to our alliances now permanent, or is there actually a way back?
Well, that's actually a harder question than it sounds like. So long as J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio aren't elected president, I think there's a way back. This is tough because how should I vocalize this? Leaders of the NATO countries are tired of being pushed around. They're tired of being bullied. They're tired of waking up in the morning and wondering if Donald Trump is going to be nice to them that day. And I'm afraid that the next president, whoever he or she happens to be, the next president is going to say, well, everything's fine now with NATO. Trump's not president anymore. And then the NATO countries say, not so fast. We're tired of being shat on like this. We're not sure we want you guys in NATO anymore. If you're threatening to withdraw from NATO, then withdraw from fucking NATO. We don't even care anymore. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, can NATO, I guess NATO could continue without the U.S., but it would be a very different animal. Yeah. The U.S. was the U.S.'s idea. It was U.S. Yeah. was the founding member. It would be like the U.N. without the U.S.
Yes, that's exactly right.
I mean, I think there's a way, but to answer that question, I do think there's a way back. But, you know, basically it's trust is broken in a second and it takes a long time to build it back. And at this point, the allies feel very mistreated, and it would take a new president to say, listen, it's different now. But then, of course, the problem for them is how do we know it's different for you with you now. Mm-hmm. But how do we know we don't get another Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. And the answer is you don't know that.
No, you don't know that. That's right.
This is thanks for the $20. Hey, John, love your show and get a lot out of it. I'm a conservative when it comes to being pro-life. Can you give me a little background about what influences your perspective on abortion, both in your faith and political values?
I've struggled with this all my adult life. I am a practicing Greek Orthodox Christian, and abortion is forbidden in the Greek Orthodox Church. With that said, the position of the church is that while it is forbidden, it's between, you know, the woman and her conscience, really. So there are priests who would say, oh, you're going to burn in the fires of hell. There are other priests who say, all right, well, you know, you're forgiven. And then it's done. For me personally, I've always thought abortion is a terrible thing for me, but it's not up to me to judge other people and their decisions. I personally have always struggled with the notion that life begins at conception. I don't think it does. And everybody is free to disagree with me and condemn me and do whatever you want. But I just always felt that this was just an issue that wasn't up to me. And so, you know, I always thought if you're against abortion, then don't get an abortion. But it shouldn't be up to you if the person next to you wants an abortion. That's always been my personal position.
Yeah, mine's a little different, but the question was for you, and we have a lot more questions.
No, I'd like to hear it, actually.
Oh, I actually do think life begins at conception. And I think that women should need and have to have the right to murder their unborn babies. It's unfortunately, and I think I would go further and say abortion should almost be sort of culturally, if not legally, but culturally mandatory for kids. Like, you know, you're 15, you get knocked up. You really shouldn't become a mom. You're too young. But I think that it's a horrible tragedy. It is murder. And I think it sucks, but that women have to have the ability to control their bodies for practical reasons. And it really, for me, it comes down to that. It's sort of like, you know, I could make an analogy that would sound like, you know, like I'm making light of the death of a child. I don't want to do that. But anyway, that's where I'm at. Mustafa, thanks for the $4.99. Mr. Ted, what is your favorite Afghan dish? Are you a dumpling guy? Where does Mantu rank among the world's dumplings? I love dumplings. I love dumplings too. My favorite are pork dumplings. Chinese ones are my favorites, but I do like Mantu a lot. But you know, give me a really good strong shashlik, and I'm a happy.
Oh my God! Yes, I went to a Turkish restaurant last night, and it was like Turkish. Where there was this gigantic billboard photograph of Istanbul on the wall, and then above the cash register was a giant framed portrait of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. But I had dumplings. I had manti, which is dumplings filled with ground beef, and then with yogurt and tomato sauce on top of it. Oh my God, fantastic!
It's such comfort food.
Yeah.
Arian Gordy, thanks for the $19.99. Good morning, John and Ted. The orange retard lies to our faces. What the fuck is new? Also, Trump says allies need to grab the Strait of Homo. Do you think this can lead to escalation? Any new thoughts on Pakistan, Afghanistan? The whole administration is as dumb as pigeon shit. Love y'all. Lot going on there. Trump is basically afraid to go into the Strait of Hormuz. He's right to be. The U.S. troops would be destroyed, decimated, as we've talked about here. Mm-hmm. And in terms of Pakistan, Afghanistan, it grinds on and no one cares.
No one cares. It's true. It's not even in the news. Like you have to actually go out and search for news about it.
Yeah, it's true. It's not. Yeah, it doesn't come up in your feed.
Now,
do you want to say any thoughts about the Strait of Hormuz?
You know, the Strait of Hormuz situation should be so easy to figure out. It's not. You can't, like the president said last night, either take the oil or buy from us.
It's a global market.
What? It's a global market, and it's not just about oil. As we said yesterday, 65% of the world's fertilizer comes through the Strait of Hormuz, and the so-called Ukrainian breadbasket can't feed everybody. So we're going to have to come to some kind of an agreement. This is
ridiculous. It's also like crazy. So the contradictions yesterday, just parenthetically, you know, we obliterated the nuclear program. There's nothing but dust there. We don't care. But we're going to, you know, destroy their ability to develop nuclear weapons and shoot ICBMs at us. But you said you did that. Which is it? Starlion, thanks for the 5.99 euros. John, you'd be better off waiting for a more honorable president. Then you can speak your mind freely.
Yeah.
Keep it real. Thanks for the 4.99. Good morning. Would you guys ever have Scott Ritter or Ryan Dawson on? I would.
Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Arian, member for a month. Just want to say thank you for the independent thoughts and media you three provide. It helps so many people, including me, find real news. Love you all. Thank you. FESO, thanks for the donation. When Trump's Bay of Pizza is a massacre, odds that we could use a nuke? Not zero, but not high.
You know, I'm glad you said not zero. I think it's highly unlikely, but you can't say zero. And I've said before, I'll say it again. Dr. Peter Kuznick, one of the country's foremost experts on these issues and the director of the nuclear studies program at American University, says that he believes it is possible. He believes that the use of a nuclear weapon is the final, his words, the final taboo, mm-hmm. and that Donald Trump is willing to consider breaking that taboo so that future presidents don't feel constrained about using nuclear weapons.
It's a final taboo for a reason. Santos, thanks for the donation. Any comments on the viral video on Instagram from Scott Ritter's interview where he calls this intervention the most criminal war plan in history?
I got to say, having watched this stuff for 35 years, I've never seen something so poorly designed, so poorly thought out, so poorly considered ever.
And so big.
And so big. Yeah.
Have you seen Kurt Metzger's Seinfeld Epstein series? Lex Wexner as a gremlin Yoda is hilarious.
I haven't seen that.
I've been obsessed with the Chinese and Iranian propaganda videos. Splest, thanks for the 1999. My son Maxie is in fifth grade. He donated his allowance to ask you this question on the live stream.
Oh my gosh.
Should American tourists worry about terrorism by Iran when traveling internationally because of the war? Probably yes.
Yeah. The Iranians, listen, I'm going to take shit from people that I'm close to for saying this. So, Azita, I'm sorry. I just have to call this like it is. Do the Iranians engage in terrorism? Of course they do. And they have for decades. They don't do it all the time. They don't do it as a matter of practice. They do it when they believe that they've been wronged. And right now they believe they've been wronged. And so does that mean that American tourists overseas are in danger? Sure it does. I think it's unlikely, but it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, your individual. I always say, like, for example, you know, how dangerous is a city? Well, it's basically what are your per capita chances of being attacked or mugged or killed or whatever. And those chances as a tourist are good. You're probably not going to be, you know, you go to Italy or whatever, nothing's going to happen. Certainly 99.99999%, but it's not zero. And those odds are a little higher than they used to be. FESO, which Disney princess do you think Lindsey Graham, do you see Lindsey Graham as? Oh my God.
Have you seen the memes from Lindsey Graham? Oh my God, they're so funny. He said he was out shooting clays in whatever it was, Henderson County. Life doesn't get any better than this. But then people have superimposed instead of his shotgun, they have like a bubble gun, and he's wearing Disney ears and princess rainbows. It's classic.
That Kiwi, hey guys, genuine question. Do you think that deep down Trump regrets starting the war? Big fan of the show. Much love from New Zealand. Hashtag pardon John.
Thank you.
You know, I think some part of him does. Maybe not all of him, but I think, I mean, he's got to be having doubts.
He's got to be. I understand the arrogance. I really do. Every president is arrogant. But you've got to be thinking, that damn Netanyahu duped me.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to be thinking that. Lala Aviation, Iran offers EU and the UK Ormuz deal. Would Israel hit tankers?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I do. I think so. I think that all the rules of warfare have been cast off to the side.
Unlikely Utopia, thanks for the donation. So sad that this is John's last episode of Deprogram. We will be talking about that at the end of the show. But wishing you the best in your future endeavors, though, John.
Thank you.
Yes, that is.
Thank you.
That's the same from me. The show will go on without John starting tomorrow. Hopefully you guys will stick around. Jiri Enjoyer, $4.99. Hey, fellas, I've seen reports of Chechen fighters saying they would back up Iran in case of an American ground invasion. Was wondering your thoughts on this. I don't know. I mean, Chechens are, John Keegan, the neocon historian, described Chechens as the most ferocious warriors in the history of mankind.
From my own experience, having captured Chechen fighters with these two hands, they are the most vicious, the most violent, and I'll use that word, the most ferocious fighters I've ever encountered. If Al-Qaeda had been made up only of Chechens, we'd have lost.
By the way, speaking of Al-Qaeda, did you take note of the president's speech yesterday in which I was meaning to ask you about this? He blamed the bombing of the USS Cole on Iran. Now, I remember that being Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, then somebody should release the Al-Qaeda prisoners at Guantanamo that we have for bombing the USS Cole.
Who writes these speeches?
See, I think he just wings it. I really do. I really do.
So would the Chechens make a difference? I mean, geographically, the Chechens aren't in a great position. they've got a lot of Russia separating them from Iran.
Yeah.
I don't know what they could do, really, except for moral support. What do you think?
I think that's pretty much it. All they could do. I mean, where else are they going to go?
Thanks for the $5, James Kelly. Do you think that speech was him giving up on his administration and his presidency? No, he doesn't. He doesn't know.
No way. I think he believes his own words.
Yeah, I think so too. Alex Brimler
started off by saying that literally everything that he said, literally every sentence, was a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, it was all crap. And none of it is going to, I mean, he's just not a good communicator. That's
no,
all.
He's not. Obama gave them $1.4 billion green cash. It was cash. It was all green.
It was all theirs too.
That's not oration. And it was all their money. Yeah.
Yeah. Which the right.
Which we had seized.
About.
Yeah.
Alex
That's
Brim.
Not oration. Sorry.
Thanks for the £4.99. Sorry. It's just, I'm aware of Achilles coming on in a few minutes. Ted, do you still do daily cartoons? Ever considered a daily deprogram cartoon?
Boy, that would be a lot of work.
I do 3 cartoons a week currently. I used to do 5. There was not really, because of the decline of print media, there weren't enough outlets to run them. I would definitely consider a daily cartoon, especially if there were a way for AI to animate them quickly, because people like the moving ones more. But I currently don't have any such plans. But if I felt like there was demand or someone wanted to pay for them, I would do it. John, is this? Hey guys, John, is this your final episode on the show? Don't go.
Yeah, sorry. Yes, but listen, it's my final episode as a co-host with Ted. But Ted and I are buddies, and I'll be back as a guest.
Yeah, which we're looking forward to. And basically what we're going to do is try out, we're going to find no one could really replace John, but we will get a new co-host who will sit in the John chair. Hisham Sawan, thanks for the $6.99 Canadian dollars. So the show will continue Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Yes. Morning, guys. John, could you please speak a little bit on Rafiq al-Hariri? Was it in the Syrians or Israelis that killed him, in your opinion?
I think it was the Syrians. I liked Rafiq al-Hariri.
Do you want to say who that was?
He was the prime minister of Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Just as Lebanon begins to claw its way out of failed state status, the Israelis, the Syrians, the Americans just push him right back down. It's a shame.
Achilles, thanks. We see you in the backstage. We'll get to you in a few minutes. Lorelei, mainly for John.
Oh, that's a lovely name.
What are your thoughts on Bustamante's plan to change his appearance and identity and hide in another country? It seems very different from having an extra place in Athens.
Right? So he cut his hair recently, but he cut his hair because he's hosting a show at the Discovery Channel, and the president of Discovery told him he looked ridiculous. So he had to cut his hair. But this whole notion, listen, if you're going to change your appearance and
don't tell anyone
and take your wife and kids and run away and hide in another country, don't announce it on national television in advance.
Ridiculous.
It's this constant struggle to remain relevant.
Boy Ali, thanks for the £5. International law and the organizations around it, e.g. the UN, are at an all-time low. True. Do you think we'll look back on Gaza as the new Manchuria moment? Yeah. Gaza is it's a real trough for the international community. We did nothing.
Literally nothing to help any human beings.
Matrix escaped. Hey John, big fan. Just ordered some Chinese boneless spare ribs. Excited. Mr. Kiriaku, thanks for that. By the way, this is from I Love Superman. Thanks for the $20 Australian. Huge fan of your work. This is for you, John. Praying for your pardon. I've always been curious about how we can separate freedom fighters and terrorists. Many attacks carried out by terrorists are called heroic when done by others.
You know, I draw the line at the targeting of civilians. The targeting of civilians for political purposes. I'm engaged in kind of a friendly debate in email with one of our viewers who every time I say that I believe Hamas can be considered a terrorist group, he emails me and objects, which is perfectly fine. That's what a healthy debate is all about. But I believe that if a group specifically targets civilians, specifically targets non-combatants, that's an act of terrorism.
That's why I
believe the IDF is a terrorist organization.
I agree with that. Yeah. And I guess the U.S. Air Force at this point, because of, we target.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like that's like resistance organizations don't target civilians. And they're very, very sad if they kill a civilian accidentally. Mm-hmm. Meow, meow. This is crazy. Call spell iCup. I don't know what that means.
Oh, my dad. Oh, my God. When I was a little kid, my dad used to say that terrible joke.
What does it mean?
I-C-U-P.
Oh, brother. Okay. Soden, thanks for the $19.99. John, where are you going? Robbie, are you starting a podcast with Reza and Brennan? LOL, JK, fair winds and following seas, my brother.
Thank you.
Ted, we go this to you're the captain now, Somali voice. Hilarious. Yes, I'm the captain now. We have Achilles waiting. Let's do Achilles and we'll fill everyone in after that toward the end of the show.
Okay.
The news comes first, always. Okay, so without any further ado, joining us here to discuss the economic implications of the war in the Middle East is Achilles Larrea. He's the head of Larrea Wealth Management in New York City. Achilles, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ted. Nice to see you, John. I hope everything's going well with you both.
Thank you. Welcome back.
You guys buy the same shirt? Is it, what's going on?
It's a good
Don't
shirt.
Don't be jealous. Don't be jealous, Todd.
I am jealous. I'm going to run out to the store immediately after this. Okay, so Achilles, it's great. Great to see you. So, look, obviously you've been following, you follow the markets. That's your job. My first question is, are oil's futures traders incredibly stupid and naive to believe anything that Donald Trump has to say? I mean, he'll say, well, we're going to get out of the war. Oil prices go down, stock market goes up. Then he say, well, then there's something that seems like it's going to be prolonged. It goes the other way. I mean, aren't these people supposed to be making decisions based on what they personally believe is likely to happen?
You know, they trade on information, guys. What you see happening right now, they saw a while ago that could have happened. So you place bets on it. And you place those bets in the hope that that happens. If it doesn't happen, you hedge your bet and you get yourself out of that position. But if it takes off, I mean, if you look at, there was one of the hedge funds they were talking this morning in the journal, up 31% just in a very short period of time. All right. And this is not unusual. This is something I see all the time, you know, with traders, that there is a reason why they make so much money on a personal and on a entrepreneurial basis, because you are risking capital every single day of your life. Kind of like that live by the sword, die by the sword. I think John could appreciate this.
Oh my God, yes.
You know, so going back to what we're talking about, you know, it is not the oil's at 110 or so a barrel right now. It's not the now that they were focusing in on. It was back when oil was 70 plus bucks, and that's when you needed to be in. You know, so people who are trying to hedge this right now, it's, you know, you're kind of a Johnny come lately. If you're an investor, you're like, hey, I'll get into oil now and, you know, let me make some bucks. Yeah, you might make a little bit. You might make your 2-3%, but you're not going to make 30%.
Well, may I ask you about that, Achilles?
Yeah, absolutely.
If there are hedge funds, and where this is all that they do, but we're in this odd position now where gold and silver and copper, frankly, are at all time highs or near all time highs. Crypto is flat, and people don't fully trust it. We've missed the oil run up, as you just said. I totally, completely agree. So then in a situation like that, where you can't even trust bonds, what's the hedge? Where would hedge investors go in an odd economic, like global economic situation like this?
John, I think that we're two factors short of a black swan event where nothing works. But I will tell you this, anything that's blue chip, and you got $150 billion in capitalization, gives you options. And those are the kind of companies that we're owning right now. We're going in and saying, we're not afraid to get back in the market. We're actually, I've been buying the last few days for my clients, and I'm not afraid to go back in. We're not making huge bets here because that's not the way I operate.
Right.
But if I'm adding, say I add 1.5 to 1.8% of a, you know, into another position or a position we already own, that's not a terrible thing. You know, my clients may not understand it while it's going on. But long term, now I'm talking about 12 to 18 months, and I've said this on other media, you know, 12 to 18 months, you're not going to hurt yourself by doing that. So getting into high quality names, blue chip stocks, or, you know, I mean, I hear about gold and silver all the time. And do you want to have a position in them? Yeah, you know, it's kind of like
5% maybe.
So small. Less. No, so small, John. You know, that let me tell you, if that really takes off and becomes the asset class, which it has at one point. But you know when's the last time that happened? The oil crisis.
Yeah.
You remember back in the 70s?
In the 70s.
I was selling snacks and beverages on the gas lines when I was a kid.
You know, we were saying just the other day, Ted and I, my dad, remember if you had like an even numbered plate, you could buy gas on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and an odd number plate Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. My dad used to be out there all the time. Yeah, there were exceptions.
If you were a salesman, my dad was a salesman traveling around the country, and he could go anywhere, any day. He wasn't restricted. So you did have that restriction.
Right. Mm. My dad used to go out and switch the license plates every day, depending on which car he needed gas.
Your dad has my soul. When I had a car my first year in college in New York, and I got tired of alternate side of the street parking, so I stole someone else's license plates whenever I wanted to just park wherever I wanted to park, and then kick the ticket, throw the ticket in the back seat, and just ignore it. Wouldn't work now. I feel bad. It was a very bad thing to do because someone
Ted
got
was
my
a
ticket.
Rebel. Ted was a rebel. Nah,
I was an asshole. Yeah, I wouldn't do that now, but you know, older and wiser.
What are the two events that could lead to this black swan situation? Because I think, listen, you're the expert. I'm not the expert, but I don't see any short term hope right now. If even bonds can't be where you go to park your money, you know, during this time of economic uncertainty, then what's left? It just seems like there's nowhere to go. And let me add one other thing. You just said something made me think of it. Are you looking for companies that are both blue chip and have large stocks of cash?
Well, every company that we deal with will always hoard cash during these times. So that's another thing to consider. That will give them a strategic advantage to become, you know, if you think about it, how did companies become dominators in their industry? They didn't do it by spending everything they had. You know, everybody looks at a Microsoft and says, wow, they're spending all this money on AI. And do you really think that Microsoft is spending all the cash that they have? Yeah, there's a bit of a cash burn there, but they can go and buy their next largest competitor if they wanted to. Yep. That's how big they are.
And
same thing with Apple. You know, these are companies that are dominators. They're going to continue to make money. There is a cult-like or a following that is still present. But in answer to your question, John, what I would say is look at gold. You know, if that starts to become the quote-unquote asset class, that's
then
one thing.
Yeah, we're in trouble.
Another thing is if oil starts, you know, Iran talked about oil going to 200. You know, they effectively control the Strait of Hormuz, you know, and that is a big black eye to us, you know. And, you know, I'm not a political person by any stretch of the imagination, but I know he who controls something gets to dictate something, you know. And we, as big a country as we are, if we're not careful, how many billions are we going to be paying Iran for that control? It's not too dissimilar than the Panama Canal.
Yeah, it's a toll. It's going to be a toll. And they used the word just a couple of days ago with this Indian flag tanker taking oil to China. The Iranians let it through because they paid a toll and they paid it in yuan.
So we need to set up a big easy pass, like, you know, at the Strait of Hormuz and at the Gulf of Aden, you know, just for these tankers, just to make it easy. But okay, so Akhil, let's talk about the elephant in the room here. Are we heading into a recession or worse?
I think we're not at that point. You know, I thought about this morning. I was listening to a couple of talking heads the last few days, and they all kind of they're kind of tilting that way, guys. But, you know, I'm not convinced. You know, I'm super bullish when it comes to the market. And even if a bear market
I'm just seeing breaking news. Oil, the price of oil jumped, stocks sank in the first opening minutes of the market opened just about
no surprise
10 minutes ago.
Yeah, no surprise. Trump did not do anything last night to alleviate the situation right here. A smart man, an intelligent man, would have tried to buffer, especially a politician. A politician would have tried to buffer the language being used right now, the rhetoric.
You mean like bombing them back to the Stone Ages was not the right was not maybe the right word?
Yeah, you might want to temper your words a little bit, but obviously we don't have that in Mr. Trump. So, you know, what I would say to you right now, if you're an investor, you need to be strategic. You need to be moving in areas that, you know, look at the defensive areas, look at the technology areas, because those areas are going to be, it's not that they're going to lose less money. It's just that when we come out of this nonsense, and I believe this is firm nonsense, I think there are ulterior motives. And John, you could disagree with me, but I believe that there are, you know, ulterior motives behind this that are not being spoken of at this particular point.
All right, well, what do you think they are? I want to know what you think they are.
That's what I'd love to know at this point. You know, I always say follow the money. You know, who's making the money right now by oil being up, by gold being at all-time
highs? The major oil-producing countries.
Correct.
Saudis, et cetera.
Right. So I don't want to own those companies right now. I want to own the companies. But
it's a temporary juice, though, right? I mean, because overall, if oil prices go too high, you tank the global economy. You end up like during the pandemic when no one was buying anything, and then
in stagflation, you know, where nothing's growing, nothing's getting done. The, you know, Congress is still in a stranglehold right now. They, you know, the ruling party cannot even pass legislation right now.
Yeah.
You know, it is literally one of the worst bottlenecks I've seen in this country's history.
Well, the thing is that the Iranians are, so here's the thing, what Trump did was the stupidest thing that you can possibly do in conflict. He not only cornered his adversary, something that Sun Tzu always said not to do, always allow a graceful exit, but on top of that, he neglected to notice that his adversary had an ace in the hole, the Strait of Hormuz. And so now he's cornered an adversary that has to win, and has to win big. And so we're offering a ceasefire, but the Iranians need and want the whole schmear. They have to have, basically the U.S. has to surrender. They have to say, we will never attack you ever again. And not only that, we'll control Israel and prevent them from ever attacking you again. That's a big ask.
I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen. I think
but that's what the Iranians have to have.
Yeah,
have
I think this is going to get prolonged out. But I also think that the Iranians at some point, you know, how does this all get resolved? Yeah. Diplomacy. Diplomacy has stopped many of the wars that have ever occurred, although the fighting will continue, but there has to start being some talking. And once the talking starts, it becomes beneficial. And, you know, they'll figure out a way where, you know, Iran and the U.S. will figure out a way where, you know, it's not just to everybody's benefit to stop this, but it to figure out a way where everybody saves face, including the United States. And that is the toughest part right now, because you can't see it right now, but it has to happen. So that's my take on this. Now, getting back to where we can make some more money is take a look at if you don't want to be in oil, may want to be in fertilizer. A lot of companies, you know, fertilizer, plastics are all derivatives of oil. So you want to have your hand in that. You don't want to be in the oil bucket or barrel.
You're saying the shit is the shit.
The shit is the shit. But, you know, like potash.
We've got to leave it there because we have to. We always enjoy having you on. This show will go on and we'll have you back for sure. Thanks, Achilles. It's Achilles Larrea, CEO of Achilles Wealth of Larrea Wealth Management. My apologies, in New York City, and always enjoy his insights. Okay, so John, we have a bunch of questions, and of course, people want answers to where you're going. So we'll be getting into all that, and I want to just answer personally one question here. Kobe I would like Ted to explain why his son, all caps, will never go into the military. Well, he might. It's up to him. But other kids must to make fun make up for his fortunate son, or just no military at all, Ted.
Don't you just love it when people think they know?
I know. It's lovely. First of all, I can't control my son. He's a fucking grown-ass man. He's going to be – he's almost 22 years old. If he wants to join the military, I can't stop him.
Doesn't he live off the giant trust fund that you
have? Yeah, exactly. The giant cash flow that is Rawl Corp. No, I mean, so look, I don't want him to join the military. I want to be very clear. I don't want anyone to join the military, and no one else must, because it's a volunteer military. So there is no must. Nobody has to join the military. Now, if there's a draft, we can have a different discussion, but that's my answer to that question.
Right.
Okay.
You know, my son flirted with the idea of joining Air Force ROTC. And I told him, it's totally up to him. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it, only because I don't trust the country's leadership, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican.
Precisely.
And I said, you don't, his mother does quite well. I said, you don't need the scholarship money or whatever they call it. I wouldn't do it. And then he sort of just dropped the idea.
Yeah.
But well, it's not so, you know, poor kids can go fight our battles for us.
We'll leave the last few minutes for what you're up to in what your next steps are going to be. But sure. Let's do some questions. Nick Brand, thanks for the $4.99. How will Putin react to a U.S.-Iran conflict, given his strong opposition to the U.S.-driven regime change? Huge fan, John. Putin's laughing. I mean, yeah, you know.
Sure he is, because we're bogged down.
Yeah. I mean, this is good news for him. The less he says, the better. You know, like when your enemy, you know, was it Napoleon who said, like, when your enemies are just tearing each other apart, don't interfere?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Let them destroy each other or destroy themselves.
Thanks for the 100 rupees. Hey, John, about India and Pakistan, you said we need to resolve Kashmir, unify. Do you think the MI6 and CIA had any hand in dividing the Punjab and cause militancy?
On the contrary, I worked for a guy who was tasked by President Clinton to be the secret envoy, the secret mediator between the Indians and the Pakistanis over Kashmir. His position was, look, if we can come to an agreement on Kashmir, whether it's a division, whether it's an independent Kashmir, whatever everybody can agree on, then economically, militarily, it's going to be better for the entire region, better for Pakistan and for India, economically, certainly. I will say, we talked about this extensively. I will say one side just was not willing to engage in such a conversation.
Okay. Melissa, thanks for the very generous $100 donation. This is just my small token of appreciation. This podcast is part of my workday morning routine, and hopefully it will continue to be. Thanks for the donation. Love y'all. Watch every morning religiously. Do you think the 250th anniversary celebrations in D.C. will be dangerous? Well, there will be. It will be to the cage match fighters on the White House lawn.
Quite literally, a cage match on the White House lawn.
Classy. A K-L-A-S-S-I-E. Or targeted by our adversaries. I actually don't. We Americans always think that, like, these, you know, it's like Hollywood, right? Like, there's going to be a big event. And no, I don't think so. It's like, it would be, if you're looking to attack the United States, you want to come when they don't see you coming, on a clear Tuesday morning, on a nondescript day. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Boy, do I.
Thanks very much, Sir Charles, for joining the show. Subscribing. Seaboat, thanks for the $10. Lyft driver here. One passenger said nothing, all ride, then reported me for listening to your podcast as anti-Semitic. What the fuck?
What?
How can we encourage debate when criticisms of Israel get labeled anti-Semitism? I am, first of all, I want to say I am so sorry.
I personally apologize to you for this happening.
If there's anything I can do, like to write a letter, email, whatever,
wow,
I will do that. And I mean,